Hi, this is Gail Moskowitz, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters. What you're missing today is my intro song, so I thought I would whistle it for you because we're having some technical problems, but I think that you probably all would be happier if I didn't whistle it for you. But nonetheless, thank you for listening to Mental Health Matters here on WRIR 97.3 LPFM here in Richmond, Virginia. Mental Health Matters is a mental health show that comes to you every Thursday at 1 p.m. We run for a half hour, and I highlight different issues in regard to mental health, and I either have a guest or I speak from my own body of knowledge. What I then hope for is that you might call and ask me a question if you have some thoughts or opinions or want to weigh in on the subject. The number to reach us today is 649-9737, 649-9737. Please feel free to give me a call. The topic today is, why do smart people stay in relationships with individuals who are toxic for them? It's something that every one of us can relate to, either in our own lives or watching other people stay tethered to wholly inappropriate partners. It's a good topic as we move back into school, because what we often see is young people having these struggles at the beginning of trying to figure out who to make and maintain relationships with. Hopefully more than as we age and move into more structured or more stable connections with people. But don't think that older people are immune to this because they're not. People of all ages, sizes, and shape, people who you would think should get it or seemingly seem so competent and together, make really awful decisions about who to be in relationship with. So why? Why would somebody stay in a relationship with somebody who is completely inappropriate for them? The subject is so huge that I can only really talk about parts of it today. My hope is that if you have a question in relation to this topic, which is why do seemingly smart, competent people stay in relationship with wholly inappropriate individuals, please give me a ring today at 649-9737. This is Gail Moskowitz. You are listening to Mental Health Matters. And I want to let you know that if you would like to ask me a question or if you would like to suggest a topic for us to speak on as the weeks go by, please feel free to send me an email at Your Mental Health Matters, that's the letters you are, and then the words Mental Health Matters, all one word, Your Mental Health Matters at gmail.com. Or go on and log on to the WRIR website and click on my show, which will give you a link to my website. If you get to my website, all of my past shows are podcasted there, and you can subscribe to my podcast in case you'd like to re-listen to some of my pearls of wisdom. So the WRIR website is www.wrir.org. So I'm going to tell you a story, okay? So there is this woman, and she is 43 years old, and she is a graduate of a very good school. And after she graduated from college, very good school, she got a degree in accounting. She went on and got a master's degree in a higher form of accounting, and then went and got her PhD in business, and she is a professor at a large university. Very bright woman. While she was at school, she was a swimmer and kept herself in pristine shape and was very, very capable of bringing together both her physical activity, her excellent athleticism, with her capacity for intellectual and academic functioning. And not only that, she was kind of a lovely girl and was, you know, a person who made friends and seemingly not an unhappy person. This individual never seemed to be able to choose an appropriate male to be in a relationship with. In her freshman year of college, she went to rush for a sorority and went to several of the fraternity parties at which she became intoxicated, went home with two of the boys, and was sexual with one of the boys, and was physical on some level with the other boy. This was early in her freshman year of college, and she was horrified at her own behavior. She sobered up the next day. Alcohol was never really an ongoing issue for her. She went and talked to a therapist. She had sort of moved past it to some degree, but really never moved back into dating the rest of her college years, other than whenever she would see these boys on campus, because of course they weren't chastised in any way. And of course she felt like she was as responsible for the debacle as they were. She would cringe and feel shameful and just horrified by her own behavior. When she graduated from college and moved on to graduate school, it was a little bit easier because she wasn't bumping into those boys or any of the boys that she knew they had told. It was a clean start and wasn't bad. In her second year of graduate school, she met and started dating another student, a graduate student, a nice guy, but he wasn't ready to settle down, and somewhere by the end of her second year of graduate school, he unceremoniously ended the relationship. So here's this woman now who is bright, competent, successful, pretty, physically in good shape, doesn't have drug and alcohol issues, and let me just tell you a teeny little bit about her family. Her mom and dad were divorced. Her father lived in the same town. She saw her father routinely because he was the churchgoer. So he would pick her up on Sunday. They would go to church together. They would share a meal together, and he would bring her home. She was certainly in touch with him by phone. He would come to school plays. He would. He certainly didn't avoid her by any means. He was in her life, but he wasn't in her life in the way that somebody who lives with you, spends time with you. So in some ways, he was a perfectly okay, non-threatening presence in her life who supported her, but never had a large array of emotion of his own. And seemingly cared about her, loved her, but was not very demonstrative. Her mother, on the other hand, was a nice woman, a successful woman. She happened to be a principal of a high school. And she remarried twice, both to just men who didn't stick around. And this was this woman's template for life, an ineffectual, shut-down father, a mother who didn't make particularly good decisions about men. And the message that she grew up with is that women are lucky to have a man who wants to be in their life, and she certainly wasn't one of those lucky women. And she had this sense of if she could have a man in her life, she'd be lucky. When she was 28 years old, she met a man who was 10 years her senior. He had been married twice. He did not mention at the time that he had any children. He didn't act as if he had any children. He led her to believe that he had been divorced twice, but that he was childless. He had a perfectly boring marginal job at a perfectly boring marginal company. But nonetheless, he seemed to work and have his own money. He lived in a condominium, and he was cute. He was a handsome guy, and he seemed to enjoy her company. They enjoyed each other's company, and she wound up marrying this man. And she was 28, he was 38, and he soon just sort of emotionally disappeared. He watched an inordinate amount of television. He had no interest in much of anything outside of his bubble. He drank every night, not to excess, not to like beating her drinking, but, you know, drank every night to where he was numb and not really affectionate or available. And they then wound up getting pregnant 5 years into the marriage, and they had a little girl. And in truth, this man then just moved out of her sphere. He didn't really eat with her. He didn't spend much time with their daughter. He went to work. He came home. He sat in front of the television set. He didn't have any friends. And at some point, right after their child was born, she found out that he had actually had a child with his first wife. And he was apparently not paying his child support. And that's how all this came to be. And she more and more and more gave up all pieces of herself to stay married to this man. She made more money than he did. She was more active than he was. She had more friends. She was charismatic. She was bright. She was pretty. She was active. And he was none of those things. And he literally almost never went out with her after work. He didn't do the grocery shopping. He didn't pay the bills. He didn't participate in keeping the house clean, other than the area that, you know, his own internal, you know, body and clothing, whatever. I mean, he did nothing to enhance or be a part of her life. And she finally started seeing a therapist, and the therapist said, you know, maybe he'd be interested in coming to therapy with you. And she somehow prevailed by saying, I don't know that we can continue being married if you don't come to therapy with me. And he said, if you make me go to therapy with you, I'll leave. I'm not doing that. You know, this is who I am. This is who I was when you married me. What you see is what you get. I'm not making any changes in my life, and I have no interest in going to therapy. So why did this woman stay with this man? Well, at first she stayed with this man because she had married him. She had had a child with him. She lived with him. And the mere thought of going back out into the world, even though she was very lonely with him, he didn't add to her life in any way. The thought of breaking that bond with him filled this woman with such self-contempt and such fear that she would no longer get to be one of the lucky ones who gets to have a man in her life. And even though she understood how irrational that was, she could not move from that belief about herself, that the men in the world that would be interested in her could not have any affect toward her, and that she just had to accept that this is as good as it got. She was certainly sucked in by lots of reasons. The only time in her life she had taken her shoes off and, you know, kicked up her feet, she wound up being sucked up into a sexual relationship with boys she didn't want to be. Her father was quite shut down. Her mother went through several men. There was no template in her mind that said people are allowed to have healthy functioning relationships with one another, that this man had some responsibility, emotional responsibility to her, that she had married somebody who literally did not have the skills to have interpersonal relationships. The best he could do is exist in her house, and she had come to believe that that's all she could expect and that that's all she deserved. And it was in helping this woman get reconnected to herself and to be able to see past the fear of breaking this off, even though it offered her nothing. The fear for her was so overwhelming that her whole sense of self was almost caught up in being one of the chosen ones in her mind who got to have a relationship. And while so many other aspects of her psyche and her sense of self were really well developed, that sense of herself as a deserving, full human being who could hope to be in a relationship with a man who was a full human being, that there was no development in her psyche along that line. And so you look at somebody like this and you say, why would this woman stay with this guy? And you have to then begin to look at the depths of her lack of sense of connection to herself, a lack of sense of self, a fear of being all alone in the world, and her belief that she had gotten as good as it was going to get. I'll cut to the chase with this story, and I will tell you that I've changed lots of facts and pieces about this story so that this person's not identifiable. But the cut to the chase with this story is that this woman, after many years of therapy, was really able to dust herself off and make the leap to divorce this man and live singly with her daughter while she continued to grow into her sense of self, feel better about herself. And she actually today is dating somebody who has an enormous amount to offer her. This took her years, this bright, bright woman. Okay, so let's look at some other kinds of situations. What makes somebody not have a deep enough sense of self that they believe that they are deserving of having healthy, interactive, mutually satisfying relationships? Well, you know, the psyche develops in a million ways. So I'm going to tell you another story. I want us to just reflect a little bit on the very beginning of what I talked about with this woman, which is when she went away to college, she wanted to rush a sorority, which, by the way, she didn't do the sorority after all, and all these very bad things happened. Well, you know what? This isn't an unusual story. Young people make bad, impulsive decisions all the time. And young people who are needy and want to be loved and want other people to hold them and touch them, both physically and emotionally, make those decisions and make impulsive decisions even more often than people who grow up in a more grounded world and are more attached to a sense of themselves earlier on. So a lot of people, a lot of young people who have not yet establish a healthy, well-rounded sense of self, go off to college or go out into the adult world and want to be in relationships because they're needy, because everybody wants to be in a relationship. People want connection, and they make themselves very vulnerable to making connections with people who are on some level as broken as they are. And that level of brokenness is expresses themselves in other ways. So then what begins to happen is that these relationships come together, and people who are dysfunctional in their own right get into relationships with other people who are dysfunctional. And instead of building each other up, as young relationships should, that they suck each other even more dry and leave each other even more with a sense of undeservingness, and a sense of not being the anointed, not being the one who's going to be chosen to be in a decent relationship. But they're needy, so they begin this process very early, because they don't recognize that maybe the way to get grounded and the way to feel good about oneself is to stay out of destructive relationships until you have a better sense of self, a better sense of competency, a better sense that you can make choices to be in relationships with people who are healthier, and that those relationships are not being established out of neediness, but out of a real sense of connection with one another. So let me then just tell you a little bit about a different story with the same kinds of issues behind it. Let's talk about a young woman who is one of three, the young woman and her two brothers. Her two brothers are each two years older than she is. She's the youngest, she's 18, her brother's 20, her other brother's 22. Her parents are married to each other. Both her parents are pretty actively alcoholic, and her mother, when she was in high school, got into recovery. Her father never did, but her mother puts up with the chaos that comes from living with her father. And so then she's the youngest. Her brother went off to one of the academies, and so literally one of the service academies, literally left his high school home and went on to be in some way very guarded environment, and is successful and doing well. Her second brother went off to college and got very caught up in the drug and alcohol scene very early and has been in and out of drug treatment several times. And now it's her turn to go off to college, and she's grown up now with watching her mother struggle through her own life, watching her mother stay tethered to her alcoholic father. And what's interesting about this young woman is that she happens to have a good relationship with her father when he's sober, because she likes him, because he's a sweet guy, because he's funny, because he's smart. But he, you know, drinks and calls people names and passes out in bars and has had several DUIs and is a very dysfunctional, selfish, addict person. And her mom is in recovery and doing much better, but embittered by this, and shares her embitterment with her her daughter, with the young woman, constantly. So she feels responsible for making her mom happy. She feels responsible for making her dad happy. She feels horrible that her brother is in and out of treatment. And so who do you think she goes out and falls in love with? Well, you know, a couple of months into college, meets the, you know, she's actually a very attractive woman, meets the cutest guy on earth who, guess what he has? Well, he has an alcohol problem. I bet you're surprised to hear that. And she immediately recapitulates, reestablishes the exact relationship with this young man that she has with her mom and dad and her brother. And she goes in and out of breaking up with him, missing him, his begging her to come back, promising her he won't drink anymore. And at the age of 20, she has now spent almost 2 years in this chaos with this young man. And what the hook is, and this is so important about why people stay in sick relationships, there's always a hook. So the first time, the hook was that this woman felt so empty, that the first woman, she felt so empty that just having life in her house, even though this guy gave her nothing, that she didn't feel that she was going to have any, this is all she could have. This is it. She felt so empty inside. And the hook for this young lady I'm talking about now, why is she in this sick relationship with this boy? Well, certainly she was ripe to fall in love with him. Her sense of herself is of this very codependent savior, and that somehow she then got caught up with this guy. But make no mistake, this boy wooed her. He was handsome. He is handsome and funny and sweet. And he understands in a real way that he has to keep her hooked in. And how he keeps her hooked in is he keeps coming back to those parts of himself that are lovely and she gets sucked back into. Because remember that if you give somebody what they want occasionally, they keep holding out hope that they'll get that again, that it'll come around again. The good parts will come around again. So they keep holding out hope that the good parts will come out again. If you're in a relationship with someone who never shows themselves in a good light, ever, 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 maybe you'll finally get it. But if you're in a relationship with someone that occasionally shows the good parts of themselves again, you keep holding out hope that they'll always be able to do that, and you stay even more tethered. And that's another reason. We're going to talk more next week about why people stay in these relationships. If you have a question for me in regard to this, send me an email, and I'd love to answer it for you. I'm going to be back next Thursday at 1 o'clock for Mental Health Matters. This is Gail Moskowitz. I thank you for listening, and I hope that you have a good week.
Today's voice of recovery is Thomas Williams, who was born in 1911 in Mississippi. By age 5, he had been diagnosed with diphtheria, leaving his legs paralyzed for nearly 2 years. At the age of 13, his mother decided to give him a typewriter. Later in life, Thomas was given the nickname Tennessee and became one of the great playwrights of the 20th century. One of the major inspirations for his female characters was his sister Rose, who had schizophrenia and was further disabled by a botched lobotomy. Tennessee had his own struggles with depression throughout his life, at one point requiring hospitalization. In spite of his struggles with mental illness, Tennessee Williams found a way to have a life worth living. Recovery from mental illness is possible. If you have a mental illness, know that you're not alone. There are millions of us. Voices of Recovery is produced by Daniel Rigsby and David Leon at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia. I'm David, and I'm recovering from a mental illness.
from Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College,
this is...
This is...
This is...
This is War News Radio.
I'm Eliana Biscard Church.
And I'm Jacob Phillips.
This week on War News Radio, recovering from war, we first take a look at the looting of the Iraqi Museum of Modern Art during the fall of Baghdad and the efforts it has taken to restore the art. Then we hear about the efforts of one group to memorialize the historic book-selling center of Baghdad, Al-Mutanabi Street, which was destroyed after a car bombing in 2007. Finally, we hear survival stories from Iraqi women who are subjected to human trafficking. But first, a roundup of this week's news.
Libyan rebels dissolved their cabinet this week in an effort to silence unrest inside the revolutionary movement after the recent death of the movement's military leader, Abdel Fattah Younes. National Council member Fatih Turbel says that the move is linked to mistakes made by the cabinet following Younes' death. Turbel, however, did not specify what these mistakes were. Younes' tribe, the Obeidi, has been outspoken in advocating for the council to investigate the mysterious circumstances surrounding the general's death.